Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This podcast is brought to you by GoToAssist. For your free 30-day trial, go to GoToAssist.com/Ally. All right, it's time to talk about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, the iPad, the App Store. You're listening to The Show Without a Name. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here with Jeff Gamet of the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Michael. It's great to be here on The Show Without a Name.
Yeah.
Yeah. And since there is no name, if we deviate from the traditional iPhone,
if we're going through the desert.
Yeah, we can talk about anything. And actually, what am I saying? We deviate all the time.
Yeah, that's true. That's part of the appeal of the show, from what I've been told.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Yep, I'm here on the show without a name.
All right. So last, I think, Thursday, we were trying to record a show, and we had a fantastic panel of people, and it was really the best show ever. Unfortunately, it was lost.
It couldn't have been. I wasn't there.
Good point.
It was nearly the best show ever.
Nearly the best show.
There you go.
So we'll make it up to everyone with a better show eventually. Not promising anything in the near future, but we'll have a good show eventually. But right now we're going to talk about our iPads, because we all got iPads last weekend, right? Was it last weekend? Was it 2 weeks ago?
It was already last weekend.
Last weekend.
It feels like it was 2 weekends ago, but it really only was one.
It's probably because none of us have been able to sleep since then with all the stuff Apple's been doing.
Yeah.
And all the cool stuff we're playing on our iPads.
Wait, I'm wrong. It was 2 weekends ago.
Was it 2 weekends ago? No, it was April
3rd.
2 weekends ago.
Wait, what's the date today?
Today is the 12th.
No shit.
See, we've all been in an iPad haze, and we've lost track of time.
Okay, so I got a 64 gig iPad. Jeff, what did you get?
64 gig iPad.
Adam, what'd you get?
I'm feeling deficient. The 32.
Okay, no, 32 is still good.
But I have a 64 3G on order.
Oh, nice.
So
okay.
I have two.
So I will. I was initially planning to get a 3G iPad. Unfortunately, the fact that a Best Buy is just 5 minutes from my office kept me from waiting. So I had to go get one, and I justified not getting the 3G because
it's not available.
Well, that one, yes, because it's not available, and two, because it's been pointed out to me that I can just get a 64 gig and it's still cheaper. So I decided to use my iPhone as the internet access point because I'm already paying for internet anyway. There's an application on Cydia for those who jailbreak called MyWi. And it's a $10 charge to buy the application. Once you buy it, it's free to have and use forever. And it creates a Wi-Fi hotspot on your iPhone. And ta-da, my iPad has internet all the time.
Duh.
That's like magic.
Magic. It's the best thing ever. I'm never updating my phone.
This is what I hate about jailbreaking.
And I'll talk about the other side of that. My phone's been totally nutso lately because of the jailbreak. I'm not saying jailbreak is perfect or that it works or that it is stable or, for real people who want to do actual things with their phones. But it is fun.
Well, you know what I read just today? I was doing some research and this made sense to me, although it's kind of dumb to have to do it this way. But I think I can't remember who wrote it, but somebody on a Great East Power page wrote a little piece about getting rid of their iPhone 3GS completely. Getting a little track phone, one of these burner throwaway phones,
yeah,
and then just getting a MiFi and going total Wi-Fi. So they have Wi-Fi for their iPad and their Mac and all their other devices, and then they just have a separate phone that's just a phone.
Yeah, I know that.
And they're saving money.
Are doing that, right? And so is he using Skype on his iPad?
Well, yeah, but he still has a cell phone too. I mean, it's just a, it's a separate device. You know, here's a crazy concept. So you have a phone that's just a phone.
I know.
That's
and
weird.
You get internet and everything else through your other cool devices like your iPad and your iPod Touch, and you've got apps, and you've got, so it's like all the benefits of that stuff without the AT&T contract, better coverage and cheaper, because it's $60 a month for a MiFi data plan versus, you know, the phone plan plus $30 or whatever for your iPhone 3GS.
Yeah, I'm convinced that I went the best route. Well, not at least for me anyway. Instead of getting the 3G, if you're a jailbreak person and you understand it, I recommend the MiWi. But I know there are a lot of people doing the MiFi thing,
or the Sprint thing,
or the Sprint thing.
Although I don't know why you'd want to be on Sprint, but that's a whole nother conversation.
You can get a Palm Pre and like collector's item.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the whole thing with dumping your iPhone and doing the cheap phone, a MiFi and an iPad, sounds really cool. All the way up until I get to the point where I want to have all the functionality of an iPad and put it in my pocket.
Yes.
You need to get an iPad fanny pack or like a sling or something. Do they have those?
I'm sure they do. And for our British listeners, Michael's referring to a bum bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you said fanny pack, they all started laughing.
Yes.
Yeah. It refers to that special girl anatomy place that's right below the belt line.
Vagina.
Vagina. That's it. Vagina. I couldn't remember the big kid's word for that.
Yeah. Adam, you're recording, right? Because my thing, I'm sure, stopped already.
I am recording.
We're having recording issues. Anyway, so there's a rumor out that the iPad may gain printing ability in 4.0 that was based on an Apple tech note, right? Just basically saying that printing isn't currently available.
All right, so I want to point out the fact that putting the word currently in there doesn't count as a hint that printing will be available in iPhone OS 4. All it means is that it's not available right now, and it may or may not ever show up.
There is a really easy way to get a firm answer on this issue.
If it involves calling Apple?
No, email Steve Jobs, apparently.
No.
That guy leaks like a sieve.
Yeah. Apparently he's the only person in Apple that's actually responding to people.
His doctor must have changed his meds or something, because he's responding to all these emails. I don't know how he does it.
I don't know. But whatever it is, go Steve.
Yeah.
So somebody should email him and say, are we getting printing on the iPad? And you'll get either yes or no.
You know, it has to be, it can't be one of us. Because they probably have like built-in special filtering applications for the iPad and mail.
Oh, for me, so that definitely do. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so if it says, oh, okay, this person is associated in some way with journalism or popular blogging.
Yeah.
And then it just goes right to the spam folder.
It's weird that Steve has so much dislike for bloggers. You know, he's blogging all the time on his website on the on fakesteve.net. So I don't know why so much animosity, but yeah.
Now, seriously, on the printing thing, I've talked to a bunch of people since getting my iPad, because people ask about it, and I have to say that printing is one of those things that needs to be there. So if they're not planning it, they really need to be planning it, because it's one of those things that keeps people from seeing the iPad as a thing that could potentially replace their computer in a lot of ways.
Well, I don't think they want people to. And here's why. When I first got the iPad, I turned it on. And as everyone else will notice, it says plug it into iTunes.
Right.
It's the first thing. You can't do anything until you plug it into iTunes. And
that's right. It's a brick until you plug it into iTunes.
It doesn't even, you know, I tested this. I turned off my Wi-Fi, so I had no internet access, and then tried to do this connect to iTunes thing. So it worked fine. It doesn't even need to call out to the internet. All it does is it just proves that you have a computer running iTunes. And if you don't have that, then you can't use an iPad. And I think that's interesting. I think that says a lot about Apple's position regarding the iPad, especially that it's not a laptop replacement or a computer replacement. You still have to have a computer, which makes a lot of sense because, you know, one stray, you know, ray of radiation or something, and then your iPad doesn't work anymore.
You have that, and you become a superhero.
That's true. Yeah, that also happens, but you know, in rare cases, and you have to.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily. So that's what some people are saying is, you know, I can't really replace my computer with this. But what I see more important and makes more sense to me is, I really still believe that the iPad has a lot of vertical sort of markets it could go into, in medical and real estate, construction,
sure,
education being a huge one. If you can't print directly from it, though, that does become a problem in a lot of those scenarios. It's like, if I have to go back just to print something, sync it with iTunes, pull a document out of that new, you know, documents area in iTunes that I can pull the document out and then print from there, it breaks the experience. So I think they need to add printing. And I was actually pretty surprised. They say they have 100 new features in iPhone OS 4. I can't imagine that printing isn't one of them. You know, regardless of this rumor about not currently, I think that's reading way too much into the documentation, as Jeff was pointing out. But
I would agree. But how would printing work from the iPad then?
Could do Bluetooth.
You could do Bluetooth, Wi-Fi. Or you could do Bonjour.
Yeah,
do printers have Bluetooth and Wi-Fi built in these days?
New I haven't ones, bought yes
forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty standard on a lot of newer printers.
Okay.
Yeah, and a lot of the print drivers are available in the printers through Bonjour. So you can have a device that doesn't need to get on the internet to download printer drivers.
It just has the driver available when it...
Right. The printer just says, here's how you print to me. The application goes, okay, I can do that. Sends the stuff over and you're done.
Right. Plus, it could help Apple sell more airports. Both Airport Express and Airport Extreme base stations have
sure.
printing built in, USB printing.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
Bonjour. So.
Did you see that the iPad, the A4 was confirmed to be the ARM Cortex A8? It was also X-rayed by the awesome dudes at iFixit.
Wait, I don't know if it was confirmed to be an A8. They're just speculating that it was, because they did confirm it's a single core, not a dual core.
Jeff, do you know? Final ruling from Jeff?
Final ruling from Jeff is, I don't know. I thought they didn't give a definitive answer.
They say the A4 is an ARM processor featuring blah, blah. So I don't know. Maybe that's just them saying that based on what they know still.
Well, here's the information that I read from a couple different sources. I think Ars Technica or iFixit, one of those. Don't have it in front of me. But there was a lot of speculation that, well, because it's a single core and all of the A8 ARM processors are single core, that therefore it's an A8 and not an A9, because the A9 has some dual core processors.
Gotcha.
But not all A9s are dual core. There is a single core A9. So it doesn't necessarily rule it out. And you're never going to really know, even with X-rays, because only Apple's going to know what's in there.
Because the architecture is just...
Yeah, and it's not, just what it was based off of, right?
Sure.
Or built on top of.
Yeah, according to Wikipedia, which is, you know, contains all knowledge, it doesn't actually say what type of ARM processor is in it. It doesn't even, I don't think it even says ARM. I searched for ARM on the page and it doesn't say anything about it. It just says Apple A4.
I'm pretty sure. Most people have looked at it, have decided that Apple really didn't have enough time since the acquisition of PA Semi to build something other than an ARM, and Apple's used ARMs in the past, so it would make sense that they built it on top of an ARM.
Sure.
And that does make sense. The thing that I think is still up in the air is exactly what ARM chip are they working with. And
does it even matter, though? The thing's blazingly fast.
It really is sweet.
It matters only in that people obsess over every single component in an Apple product.
Right.
So, but outside of that, No, I mean, the thing works really well. It's really fast. And holy crap, the iPad rocks.
Yeah, I think the more important thing that they discovered in there was that the, you know, two of the layers is the RAM. So the RAM is integrated with the processor, which I think is one of the things that helps with the speed.
Oh, yeah. I love that. That's one of my favorite features. I've always thought that eventually we're just going to end up with balls of silicon, you know, because it, you get rid of a lot of latency by, you know, getting them close.
Is this where I make the 12-year-old joke?
What joke would you be making? I don't know anything about
it. About your balls of silicon.
I said silicon, not silicone. Those are different, right?
It doesn't matter for the purpose of the joke.
For the purpose of the 12-year-old joke, you're right.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. There'll be room for other bathroom jokes. Yeah.
Yeah, later on in the show.
Have you most likely.
Guys been experiencing any Wi-Fi issues or power charging difficulties?
You mean the two issues that are non-issues?
Are they not? I haven't had any issues with my Wi-Fi other than an occasional YouTube cannot connect kind of thing.
That could just be YouTube.
Here's the reality on the Wi-Fi thing. Apple came out with an article and mentioned two potential, one of the probably biggest problems, because it seems like it's an isolated few, you know, not set of people, excuse me, an isolated set of people. They mentioned that if you have one of the new dual band routers, so like I have one of the new AirPorts where you can set up the guest network and it could be a G network or an N network and you can set up a separate G and N network. If you have both those on and you've named them both the same thing, the same SSID, it can freak out the iPad because it'll be on one, it'll go to sleep, and then when it tries to reconnect, it might try and pick up the other one that's named the same thing, but it's on a different frequency band, and then it has trouble connecting.
That sounds like a bad design on the part of however they have that set up, though, because your Mac can handle that, right?
Oh, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the settings on the AirPort is. It says, you know, would you like to turn on, you know, the dual band? I think the dual band's on by default, and
it can handle it. It just doesn't like it when they're named exactly the same. So if you call the 5 gigahertz one Michael and the 2.4 gigahertz one Michael, it freaks it out. So just name it, you know, Michael 5 gigahertz, Michael 2.4 gigahertz, and the problem goes away.
I just think that's interesting because that's the default setting, is to have the dual band, you know, whatever you call it, it calls both of those bands the same network. And there's an option to default, it's one network, but you can set it to do separate ones. And I do that because I want to know if I'm on the 5 gigahertz or not.
Right. And then secondarily to that was also if you run both those bands in different encryptions. So if you use WEP on one and WPA on the other, so some people might use for their guest network WEP versus WPA. And so if it's connected on one security protocol and then tries to connect on the other, I guess that kind of freaks it out too. But the third thing I wanted to mention is I did discover that the iPad basically for me has the same connectivity range as a little bit better than my first gen iPhone, which is worse than my 3GS. So I think a lot of people are comparing it to their iPhone 3GS, which has an all plastic back and gets better reception, as opposed to like a first gen iPhone or the iPad, which has an entire aluminum back. And just so you don't get as strong a signal, but I can still get the signal. It's just I have one bar, whereas my iPhone might show 3 or 4 bars in the same area of my house.
Sure.
But I've never had the problem of it actually dropping connectivity. And it does seem to bounce up and down in terms of the signal strength. But again, I've never trusted the on-screen sort of signal strength indicators. You know, the little bar icon bounces up and down. And as long as my connection speed is still good and I can browse websites and it doesn't seem slow, I don't get what the problem is.
Yeah.
One bar, 5 bars.
If it doesn't work in your bathroom, just set up a repeater. Apple sells those.
Exactly.
So I actually noticed that my iPad works pretty well. Even in areas where Wi-Fi is spotty, it works about as well as my other devices do. And for those who are curious, the antenna is the Apple on the back.
There's actually two.
Really? Where's the other one?
Just behind the glass.
Behind the glass. Okay, yeah. I know that at least one of them is the Apple.
That's correct.
Which is
kind of cool. Which is also what Apple did on the iMac.
Oh, yep. Cool.
The new iMacs with the aluminum backs.
Are they all aluminum on the back now?
Yeah.
See,
Michael, you should really go out to the Apple store every now and then.
I know. Okay. Let's see. Oh, the power thing. I did want to talk about power because initially I saw, okay, dot connector, USB, cool. I can plug it into my computer or whatever. And I have a hub plugged into my computer. So I plugged into the hub, didn't
charge. That didn't work.
Nope. Plugged into the computer, took a long time. Plugged it into my iPhone charger because I was lazy and didn't take out the iPad charger. And it took forever. Took forever. And then I realized, oh, it's an iPad and it might require more charging mm-hmm. ability. So it, I guess the standard USB is 5 watts, right? And iPad's charger that comes with it is actually a 10 watt.
Right. And the iPhone charger, I believe, is a 7 watt.
Oh, okay. Even the itty bitty one is 7?
Yeah. I think it is.
I
was going to pick one up and look at it, but I realized there's not one sitting around here, so can't do it.
I can see if I have one here.
It's so 5 watts. I have mine here. It's 5.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay,
too.
So maybe the old one is 7.
No, that's 5 volts. I don't know where the watts. 5 volts, 1 amp. Who cares? Anyway, continue.
Wait. So the question a lot of people have been asking me, and I've been afraid to try it just because I don't want because of the whole lithium ion battery thing. But a bunch of people are asking if I plug my iPhone 3GS into that 10 watt adapter, is it going to charge twice as fast, or is it just going to explode?
What I've heard, and I have not tried this because I'm kind of afraid to as well, is that you can charge an iPhone off of the iPad adapter and it won't blow up. But no one is saying if it charges any faster.
I wonder if it just electronically limits it, just says I only need this much and then the charger only provides that much. Because it is USB, I assume they would either like put a bunch of warnings on it and say don't charge standard USB devices with this, or it would just work.
Right.
Right.
Right. You can tell we're all electrical engineers, right?
Yeah. My plan is to put colored electrical tape on the different chargers that I have since they all look alike now.
And then make a rainbow?
And I'm going to make a rainbow of electrical colors.
I'm inviting somebody who does know about this to email us and go, you guys are dumb.
Absolutely.
It's perfectly fine.
What's the email? podcast@iPhoneAlley.com is still the email address. We're also looking for a new show name, but I'm thinking to digress briefly, I'm thinking we have communicators. I like that. And I think you, Adam, mentioned that, you know, just offhanded, didn't really think it sounded good, but I like we have communicators.
No, I like that one.
Because it sounds like an indie rock band, and that's cool. And two, not really. That's not that's not my real reasoning. But
just so you know, the name alone isn't enough to get you dates.
It could be an indie rock band. But I looked around, and because I'm not a huge Star Trek geek, I wanted to figure out what they call those electronic thingies that they have that they carry around and do iPad type stuff on.
Pads. It's called a pad.
It's called a pad. Yeah. PADD.
Right.
Now, Jeff, tell us what it stands for.
What is it? Personal assistant, digital data display, something like that. I can't remember.
Parietal disgorgement assistant, or that's the hipster PDA.
That's the hipster PDA.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I can't come up with anything with pad, but you know, I like the Star Trek reference because it's futuristic and I like thinking that the iPhone is pretty futuristic.
I think I was close.
Personal access display device. Is that right?
Yeah,
that's it. It's personal access display device.
Yeah. So if you have any Star Trek-y names, send them our way. Podcast@iPhoneAlley.com.
Somebody proposed I3PO. Did you get that?
I don't know. I've gotten a lot of them
because there's three iPhone operating systems, so three iPhone operating system.
Yeah, but podcast. Then we'll have to change every time there's another one.
Yeah.
Who knows what Apple's going to do next? A watch.
You know, I did some searching there. I did look like I couldn't find it. I was shocked at this, but there's no podcast called the iPhone OS show. iPhone OS show.
But that's so literal.
Benign and lame.
And that's why I like the...
We have communicators.
We have communicators because it's so cancerous and not lame.
That's cool. Let's do it.
Cancerous.
Well, he said benign, so I just went the opposite. But
okay, I totally get it now.
You know,
yeah,
it's
infectious. Yeah. We have communicators. Vote, everybody. If you're... send me a Twitter. Don't email me because I'll get a million of them and I won't read it because I don't read my email. Send me a Twitter. Twitter.com.
You'll get a million of them.
Michael Johnston. At Michael Johnston. And let me know yay or nay on We Have Communicators. And moving back to iPad stuff. You know what I think? I think we need a MacBook charger because it still takes a long time to charge the iPad, I've noticed.
Oh, I wanted to comment on the plugging it into a USB hub.
Okay, go.
You do know you plug it in, it says not charging, but it actually is charging.
Uh-oh.
Did you know really? That?
No.
If the screen is off, it is charging, but it's really slow.
How can you tell? Is it like looking for the refrigerator light to see if it's off?
No,
yes, Mike.
You plug it in when it's at 20% and you walk away for a couple hours and you come back and it says 30%.
Oh, okay. I thought it involved like putting a tape over the that little thing in the door.
No, but it will not charge when it's on, which is why it displays the not charging message.
Gotcha.
Now, and if you have a new MacBook Pro, it will apparently charge an iPad faster.
Mm-hmm. Than the charger?
No.
No. Than other MacBook Pro models.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So it's all very confusing.
New unibody, or do you not know?
It has to be one of the new unibodies. I think it's like the current unibody and then the previous unibody MacBook Pro will do it. And then older than that, it's the lower voltage onboard USB.
Okay.
And for the numbers people out there, I probably should throw in that when I first got mine, I did do both discharge and recharge testing. So I timed my actual usage going from 100 to 0%, and I got 10 hours, 4 minutes doing normal, and that's with Wi-Fi on. Bluetooth might have even been on as well, but definitely using Wi-Fi almost the whole time and doing a variety of tasks, including watching video and listening to music and doing RSS feeds and web surfing and playing games and all that stuff. I got 10 hours, 4 minutes. And then to actually do a 0 to 100% charge using the 10-watt in-wall adapter was 4 hours.
Sounds good to me.
So, yeah.
Takes less time to charge it. That's fine. I think Gizmodo did a test where they said they used it as hard as they possibly could, and I believe them. I'm guessing porn. But they said they got like 6 hours like in maybe 30 minutes or something. Similar to that. So that's really good. And I'm very impressed with the battery life on my iPad. I actually did a restore right when I got it, a software to restore to make sure nothing weird had happened in the in loading the software onto it. Because I noticed with the iPads I got before my personal one that some weird stuff was happening and it didn't go away until restoring. So if you have weird stuff happening on your iPad, maybe try restoring it with the
Also be aware the first time you plug it in, it wants to sync every application that you have, which I think stinks.
We should talk sometime about what we do with all the applications that we don't use, because I have a lot that I don't use and I don't care about, but I don't, because Apple doesn't allow me to see which apps I've purchased. I want to have some kind of archive, so maybe we'll talk about that on another show. But did anybody get the case, the iPad case?
The Apple one?
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
How is it?
Despite what you hear on the internet, I really like it.
Oh, good. Because I'm getting...
I think it's a really nice case. Now, it does show dust, and if your hands are dirty, it'll leave marks. So you end up wiping it off a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the iPad itself. So.
Just like the iPad, yeah.
It's good that they included a thing to wipe off your iPad, right?
Yeah, wouldn't that have been swell?
No.
Yeah. Not.
Yeah. But okay, so what I like about the iPad case is that the material it's made out of appears to be pretty durable. And I've been trying to get Apple to tell me what it is, but what a surprise, they won't answer me. And I love that you can use it to turn your iPad up at an angle. And that's turned out to be a big thing for me, because I'll actually set my iPad on my lap, and having it angled up a little bit is really nice when I'm typing. And I've actually written articles on my iPad.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I wanted to talk about typing on the keyboard, because I initially totally hated it, and I'm gradually getting better at it.
I wrote a full article on mine the afternoon the iPad came out.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
I had him activate my iPad in the store so that I could actually use it, and then ended up in my car and was writing in the car with the sunlight, with my iPad on my lap. And
you were driving.
Yeah. Actually, I was playing passenger at that point. So I was safe while going down the highway, and was able to write an article.
Nice.
And I was pretty much touch typing the whole time.
Was it?
Okay. So that was Sorry.
Was it comfortable, Jeff?
Yeah. Yeah. It worked surprisingly well.
The landscape or the portrait?
I was working totally in landscape. In portrait, the keyboard is a little too small, I think, for easy touch typing. But when you're in landscape mode, the keyboard isn't that far off from the size of Apple's actual keyboard.
Gotcha. Yeah. I've been getting used to it and enjoying it. Adam, have you
had any? I find I can type on it just about as fast as I can type on a physical keyboard. But what I wanted to ask you both, and Jeff already answered it, was, are you both touch typists? Because I've talked to a lot of people, and the consensus seems to be that if you're a hunt and peck typist like I am, never took a typing class, but I can still type pretty quickly, that you won't really miss a beat. But if you are someone who touch types, it's a little more of a learning curve.
Yeah, I'm a touch typer. And I feel like, yeah, there is a little more of a learning curve. I actually thought about that. You know, if I was one of those people who paid attention to the keys constantly while I was typing, it would be much easier, because I'm always reaching for something and it, you know,
right,
it's not there.
You know, it might have been easier for me to adapt to the keyboard, because on my desk, and I'm not kidding, I actually have three keyboards in hands reach all the time. I have a Matthias Tactile Pro, which is the real loud clacky keyboard that I type on almost all the time. Then I have one of the Apple aluminum keyboards that I use. Well, I used it exclusively for like 2 months just to get used to it. But now it's here so that I can type quietly when I need to look stuff up or whatever during podcasts. And then, of course, my laptop keyboard. And so I'm jumping between keyboards all the time. And that might have made it easier for me to adapt to the on-screen keyboard on the iPad.
Have either of you used the Bluetooth keyboard thing, or just, yes, a keyboard with the iPad?
I literally just got my keyboard dock. It came UPS today. So I just posted actually some pictures to my Facebook and Flickr if people want to check those out. And I'm going to be doing a video unboxing and stuff. Huh?
What's your Flickr?
Flickr.com/TheMacCast.
Okay, cool. Or is it, do you have to do /photos/MacCast, or is it?
Oh, hold on, let me see.
Photos.
It might just be MacCast. I get confused because some places I missed out on MacCast and others. Yeah. /MacCast. Sorry, yeah, not the MacCast. /MacCast. Flickr.com/MacCast.
No, /photos/MacCast. Or do you have to do the photo thing?
No, you don't.
It adds it in automatically.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sweet. Okay.
So I haven't awesome. Played with that yet. But I know that I'm going to be irritated by the fact that you can't go landscape. I know that's going to be a problem, because there's some apps that are landscape only.
Yeah. Yeah. I got the standard dock because I enjoy docks and I wanted to put it by my bed. And I do wish that there was a way to prop it up on a dock in landscape, but I guess that's what the iPad case is going to do for me. Can you, Jeff, do you know if you can put the iPad in the dock with the case on, or probably not?
You cannot.
That's one of the annoying things about it. Don McAllister just actually took scissors to his, or a knife to his, to
probably
adapt
do
it
too.
That went poorly for him.
Uh-oh.
I mean, it worked, but he has a butt ugly iPhone or iPad case now.
Yeah.
And of course, he's in the UK where you can't get this stuff yet. So if he wanted to go replace his case, he'd probably have to get someone in the US to do it for him.
Well, yeah. What I was wondering about, Jeff, have you ever tried? I've never got one, but SendStation makes this dock extender, which is basically like a little pass-through dongle.
Mm-hmm.
For the dock, so it has a, you know, has a male on one end and a female on the other.
Yeah.
I was wondering if it would work with that.
Probably. I think it would work if the back of the dock wasn't so tall. Do you know what I mean? Because it would have to go above that little back. The back is what's preventing you from putting the iPad in there with the case in the first place. And it's just not tall enough. So if there was one that was tall enough, yeah, totally.
Oh, but yeah, I see what you're saying now because I just looked at mine.
Ah. Yeah.
I don't know. So it's a weird problem. So, you know, two things for me. The keyboard dock, I don't know why they didn't come up with some ingenious way for you to rotate it.
You know, they probably figured, oh, if people want to use the iPad in landscape mode instead of portrait when they're typing, they can just get the Bluetooth keyboard.
Yeah, which that works very well, Michael. If you were asking earlier, the only thing that is a little strange about it is if you have your Bluetooth keyboard paired with a Mac already, like I have mine, even though I went into the Bluetooth menu and said disconnect and I disconnected my keyboard from my Mac, the iPad would not see it until I actually went into the Bluetooth settings on my Mac and completely told it to forget about the keyboard.
I had a similar with my, I have a Jaybird Bluetooth thing, a headset, and it, I use it with my iPhone a lot, and I wanted to use it on the iPad, and I had a similar issue where it took forever. I had to turn off the Bluetooth on my iPhone and walk away from my iPhone and turn it on and off and turn off the headset on and off. And it took forever to actually get it going. But once it's going, it's fun.
Yeah. And it worked great. The only other thing is that the, there is one little trick and I'm trying to remember it now because, there's a way with the Apple keyboard, the iPad dock keyboard, there's a whole set of special keys for controlling things like going to the lock screen or bringing up the virtual on-screen keyboard and stuff like that. And you don't have those keys with the Bluetooth keyboard. Although told me there is a way to bring up, and I forget which key it is. It might be the eject key to bring up the on-screen keyboard. Why you'd need to do that, I don't know, but
that's my
phone. The reason I could see someone wanting to bring up the on-screen keyboard when they're using the Bluetooth or the dock keyboard would be if they can't remember a special character, like if they want E with an accent on it. And if you tap and hold on a letter on the keyboard, it brings up a pop-up menu that shows you all the special versions of those characters.
Right.
So there's special keys for that. There's like a home key, which is where the escape key would normally be on the keyboard. So you can hit that. And that's like, you know, hitting the home button on the iPad. There's a lock key. There is a key for going into the photo frame mode.
Yeah.
So it has some specialized keys on the physical keyboard dock.
I'm interested after you've had a chance to play with this to know if that improves your productivity or speed in using your iPad having that keyboard. I bet it would.
It'll be interesting. The other weird thing about it, it has this mythical blank key in the middle.
Yeah, it's a key and it doesn't have anything printed on it.
Yeah, it's like what would normally be like the F7 key. It's just a blank.
Hmm.
Huh. That's
Maybe that's how Apple's gonna push a software update. Or something.
and then it will magically self silk screen.
Yeah. Exactly. Just like the iPhone does, huh?
Yeah. Just like that.
Yep. Okay. So moving on. iPhone OS 4.0. That was announced last week on Thursday, right?
Right.
I'm not confused about the date on that. And lots of really awesome things were announced, including multitasking.
Not just in case someone out there is going to freak out and say, RNA is multitasking. Third-party application multitasking.
Yes, third-party applications now have the or will have the ability to run in the background. And they are providing 7 APIs for this to happen, because the way they introduced it was, well, we never wanted to do multitasking because it does a lot of things to battery consumption and also performance. So they wanted to do it in a way that wouldn't impact either of those things. And they have a really cool solution for that. What Apple does with applications that are running in the background is they essentially just idle it, right? I don't know how they do that. I'm not a programmer, but they just say, hang out and don't do anything.
Doesn't that sound a lot like when I was talking about application persistence?
That's exactly what Jeff was talking
about. Isn't that just exactly what you were talking about.
Isn't that just weird that what I was thinking would be the way to do it turned out to be exactly what they did?
That's fantastic. I hope that happens with me sometime.
When I saw them doing that, when I saw them doing that part of the demo and they described how everything worked, I was just completely stunned.
Yeah. It's sweet, though. They didn't do a really lame job with it either. The APIs that they are providing seem to pretty well cover a large portion of applications that would want to do anything in the background. So the first is background audio for things like Pandora or Last.fm. So if you want to listen to an internet radio thing, open it up, start playing, leave the app, go do other things, and the music will continue playing. And supposedly it won't really impact your performance. And even cooler, the lock screen controls that you can bring up by double-clicking the home button, they let you control Pandora now or other applications that use the background audio API.
Right. And the reason they can do that is basically they're just handing that off to the built-in audio streamer that I would imagine that the iPod uses, right? So it's just, hey, play this stream instead of this local file, but the app doesn't have to stay up and doing anything. So they can shut down everything that Pandora is doing in the background with the album art and all the graphics and stuff like that. So all they're really doing is maintaining the audio stream, which is going to use a lot less resources than the app itself.
Yeah, they already do that even streaming too in iTunes. If you go to the podcast directory and tap a podcast and listen to it, you can exit and go somewhere else. So yeah, it's just kind of providing that same deal to third-party apps. You can also there's a VoIP application API. Mm-hmm. So if you, for Skype, for example, you launch Skype and then it's running in the background, so you can go do other things. And when you receive a call on Skype, it'll just come through similar to the way it does with the phone application, except it'll pop up a little notifier and say, so-and-so is calling, do you want to answer with Skype? And then you hit the button. Same deal with if you're at the lock screen, it'll say slide to answer. And if you take a call and go somewhere else, it will show that double high status bar that you get with the phone application, you know, that green bar at the top that you can tap and return to the call. Same deal with the Skype application or any other VoIP application. It'll let you do the tap to return a call thing.
And it's red.
Yep, it's red. Which I guess they ran out of colors they wanted to deal with, so they're just providing red.
I wonder if it's settable. I wonder if you can change if it's always red or if the developer actually can sort of pick colors other than green.
I hope they can at least pick.
I bet they can't.
I bet they can't either. I'm guessing they're only allowed red. I know that they only have green, blue, and red. So like lightsaber colors.
Well, where's purple?
Traditional lightsaber.
Purple is a...
No.
Sam Jackson can
Waste
have that on his phone.
Purple, okay?
Only Samuel Jackson.
His own special edition. The one thing that they conveniently left out of the Skype portion of that demo, because they had Skype show the functionality, is, and it came out afterwards, is still no 3G though. Skype.
Right.
Why?
That's what everybody wants to know. There's some speculation that for some reason, and I guess it's because they've done it with other phones, that Skype did a 3G exclusive with Verizon.
Oh.
Huh. about that?
That's interesting.
Again, total rumor and speculation, but that was one theory.
Huh.
Because there are other VoIP apps that will run on 3G on the iPhone, just not Skype. Skype said they will do it eventually, but they never gave a time frame and they still haven't enabled it yet.
Weird.
And they were asked, apparently right after the keynote, if it was going to be 3G in OS 4, and they said no.
Oh, weird. That's weird. Okay, so moving on with the APIs, background location. So for applications like TomTom or Looped or Brightkite, for example. So if you're doing TomTom navigation and you want to go to another application, you just exit out and TomTom will continue running in the background. And it'll also, not only will it just use the background location API to figure out where you are and help navigate you, but it also has the background audio thing. So if you are listening to music and you're in another application, it'll still give you the audio instructions as you're in another app, which is really sweet.
Yes, it is.
The there are two options with the background location thing. The one is use GPS, which you would want with a TomTom or a Navigon. But if you're using like Looped or Brightkite or a social network app, that it doesn't really matter if it's spot on accurate. It can just use the cell tower location, which would use much less power, which is also a good thing to have.
Well, okay, so I have a question for you about that, because I got a different understanding of it, and I might have to go back and watch the video for a second time. I thought when Scott Forestall was talking about that feature, what he was saying was that for apps that don't need to have GPS on all the time and where you can't be plugged into power like you can with the nav apps,
yeah,
what they can do is they have to have the baseband on all the time anyway for the phone. And the baseband can tell when you move from one tower to another tower.
Right.
So my understanding was what they were going to do was use that baseband jump as an indicator to tell the app, oh, look, you've moved. So if I'm running Brightkite and I want to have it auto update my location, what Brightkite can do is it can go in that state and then says, okay, when I move towers, I've moved location. So just for that instant, wake up the GPS, acquire a location, report that back, and then shut it back down again.
Yeah, I believe that's the same thing.
So it will still report back an accurate GPS location on an iPhone that has GPS capabilities. It's just not going to be always on. So it's not like it's switching over and only using the cell tower or the Wi-Fi, you know, Skyhook thing like the iPhone the iPod Touch or the iPad would have to. The iPad Wi-Fi would have to. Is that am I correct in my understanding of that?
I think so. I'm not really sure what the difference is between what I said and what you said. I don't.
I thought you were saying that it was going to use the Skyhook instead of the GPS location.
Oh, yeah. It uses, from what Scott Forestall said, he said it uses the cell tower thing. I'm not sure if it'll use Skyhook. I'm sure that'll be an option, too. That's the thing that it does with the Wi-Fi, but...
Well, but is the cell tower like the assisted GPS versus true GPS?
The assisted GPS thing is, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, either using cell tower or Wi-Fi or maybe something else to get a kind of broad idea of where the device is before GPS can get a lock, right?
Yeah, well, the way I understand it, assisted GPS is, it's like a tiered thing. Use Wi-Fi locations from Skyhook or cell tower triangulation.
Right. Yeah.
And if you can't get a location from those, then you jump to GPS. And if it's an application that requires finer control over or finer information about where you actually are, then it will jump to GPS also. But so GPS is always last resort.
That's the background location thing that you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So also for those who are concerned about their location being kind of broadcast and that sort of thing, there's a little indicator in the status bar that shows whether an application is using your background, your location information in the background. It also, they've updated the panel in 4.0 in the settings where it allows you to turn on and off the location services. It shows you which applications have access to location services and you can turn those on and off. And there
are, and that's nice because you can do it app by app.
Yeah, which is great. And let's see, push notifications we already know about. That's still in there. But they're also adding local notifications, which is fantastic for applications like OmniFocus or any reminder application, for example. And I know that our pals at PowerBase, they have the application, the Notify Me, that uses push notifications that requires, you know, a server to do any sort of notification it with push notifications. So the local notifications, I assume, just kind of hooks in with the same stuff that the calendar app uses now. So it'll just pop up a little notification and not require towers to do so.
Yeah, we were kind of thinking it's probably just like, for Unix nerds out there, it's like setting a cron almost in the background.
Probably, yeah.
You know, it's just scheduling a reminder with an internal clock system.
I know that the Omni guys, they set up a feature in OmniFocus where you can push out your to-do items that have an alarm. You can push those out to a hidden calendar on your mobile me, and then you subscribe to that in your calendar application on your phone. Is that right, Jeff? Do I have that correct, or do you remember?
I'm not sure if that's how it works, but that sounds right.
It sounds right. Yeah. So they make a hidden calendar on your mobile me if you have a mobile me, and then you subscribe to it. And then whenever you have a notification, it pops it up that way and then brings you back into OmniFocus, which is a super weird way to do it. So it's great that they're adding the local.
Don't have to do that anymore.
That's yeah. Nice. There's also task completion. So for task completion apps, such as they used Flickr as an example. So if you're uploading a bunch of photos to Flickr and you want to go do something else while that's happening, you just pop down to the home screen. It'll still happen in the background. It'll upload those photos or whatever the application needs to do in the background, which is fantastic.
That's
and then
awesome.
The last bit is they say is the most important. Is just simply fast app switching, which allows your application to just idle without using resources. So you can switch back and forth. And in their demo, they showed switching back and forth to like Mail and Safari and other applications. And it looks great. It looks fast. And after playing with the simulator, it seems that any application that you launch goes in the background immediately. You actually have to explicitly kill it from the background if you don't want an app going. So it's an opt-out kind of thing, not an opt-in. You don't have to say, okay, background this app, which
go ahead.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but if their system is so good that those applications really don't use any resources, then I guess that's okay.
A couple things on that. My impression is that what they are doing, anybody who has a MacBook or a MacBook Pro and has seen what happens when your battery goes completely to zero, you know what they do? They basically take all of the state of everything that's open and running and they dump that out to disk.
Right.
And sort of freeze everything in a state. And I get the impression that that's what they're doing. The concern I have with what you were describing, Michael, where it's sort of like this, you know, opt out thing where everything automatically does that when it goes into the background, is that on the iPhone or the iPod Touch or the iPad, you don't have disk. You know, all the memory is just the flash that you have. So they're going to have to store that information. It might be very small for some apps, but it's going to be stored in there. So the more apps that you launch through a given day and then go into that state in the background, yeah, maybe they're not using up active resources, but it's going to have to use a little bit of your RAM storage.
Yeah, so you got to wonder if you fill up your iPhone completely, will it say, sorry, you can't background right now. You need to free up some space. Or will they do what they do with the Macs in that hibernate mode where they just take up some space for that beforehand? So there's like a 4 gigabyte chunk on my computer because that's how much RAM I have.
Right.
I wonder if they'll do that with the phone. Probably.
Right.
That's how they're doing it. If they're writing it to the flash, then I guess that's how they would do it.
Right. And here's my other problem with it is, so today I launch an app, say like Calculator, right? I don't need calculator to save its state in most instances. Maybe if I'm working on a really complex calculation and scientific calculator, I might want it to. So it's great to have the option. But for me, most of the time I'm opening up calendar, it's to do some simple math equation, get a number, and then I'm done with it for the rest of the day. Under the new model, if I launch calculator and then leave calculator, it's going to go into that state and it's going to be sitting running in the background. If I want to quit, if I want to actually have it not be in that background state, I have to double tap the home button. I have to find it in the little list that pops up. So this thing slides up that shows all your background running apps, which is really cool. Then I have to click and hold on it. Then it gets, it starts jiggling. It gets the little red X. I have to click the red X to quit it. So I don't know how many, that, what was that? Double tap.
That doesn't sound like a good system.
It's like four. Is there going to be some shortcut way for me when I'm leaving an app to say, you know, shut this down, don't put it into the background state?
Like, I have to think that Apple hasn't finished this interface, because that is ridiculous. What you just went through, you know, that all that is just too much, right? You don't want your calculator to be in the background unless you really want your calculator in the background.
Right.
I feel like it should be an opt-in thing, especially with stuff like turn-by-turn GPS. If you don't know about that, see, this gets into what we've talked about in the past with multitasking and how it would affect users who aren't very tech savvy.
Yeah, exactly.
They won't know. They won't know that they're doing that, that they're taking up space, if that's how the operating system does it. And they won't know that if it's, you know, maybe using GPS in the background and killing the battery, and they won't know that.
Right. And it's another reason, the space issue is another reason why I'm thinking some of the older devices aren't supported. Because if you have a first gen 4 gig iPhone, and this is how multitasking is set up to work, you know, so let's assume that the hardware is capable of doing it, and we don't even know that, but say it was, Apple may have even just purely made the decision saying, well, they're just not going to have enough RAM floating around to make this viable.
Yeah. I believe it's the original iPhone and the iPhone 3G that both will not support multitasking.
Basically, right.
You have to have a 3GS and the most recent iPod Touch model.
Right, yeah.
Or an iPad. And
I wonder if they did maybe something similar to the iPad, where they moved the memory modules, the flash memory, closer to, or maybe they have a lower latency system for that, that it makes more sense to do. Because even if you're loading something from a saved state, you're still loading it from the flash. It's pretty similar to launching the application.
Right. Right. And they already have a hack for the 3G to enable the multitasking in OS 4. And it's a simple plist hack, from what I'm understanding, if you have a jailbroken phone.
Yeah, that's what I would assume. So people are already on the 4.0 and playing with it. And
yeah.
If I think you were saying that most people are reporting it sucks so far. Like right now it's just bad because it's buggy and new.
Which would make sense. And keep in mind, what developers are working with right now probably has a lot of debug code in it too. So it's not going to be completely efficient.
Yep. Probably going to be a little slow. Probably going to crash a lot. And there's also no jailbreak for it right now, but they have jailbroken it. That's also a really neat thing. They've already jailbroken the iPad and the 4.0. We're just waiting for a release of that. But yeah, I would not recommend using 4.0 on a phone that you use.
No, it's probably not advised.
No.
Go out and buy a new iPod Touch specifically for it if you really need to do it, I would think.
Oh, we didn't mention how the backgrounding thing works. Adam, you kind of mentioned it, but it's to get to applications that have been put into the background, you double click the home button and a little, the entire screen kind of shifts up and reveals the applications in the same area as the dock would show. And it just shows you four icons and you can scroll back and forth through those. I don't think that's too great either, because it only shows you four. And if it's launching every app in the background that you open, then it's going to be tough to find apps pretty quickly. But it works. I guess. And the second new feature that they mentioned, they said that there were over 100 new user features and 1,500 new APIs for the developers. So they focused on seven. The second one was folders for the home screen. So now you can arrange your applications into folders if you have too many apps on your home screen, which is a welcome change. I have a I have a home screen for games. I have a home screen for productivity apps, and you know, a junk drawer kind of folder, or not folder, but junk drawer page where I just kind of toss apps that I don't care about and web apps and that sort of thing. Do either of you remember how many apps Steve mentioned you could have if you replaced every icon with a folder?
It was over 2,000.
Over 2,000, yeah.
Something, yeah.
You can only have 12 in a folder, though, which is important to note.
Oh, so you can't scroll through a folder?
I don't know if you can scroll through or not, because I don't know how many fit in a folder, because you have to have room for the icon, and then it kind of scrolls down underneath it. But there is a 12, at least right now as it stands, there's a 12 item per folder limit. But you know, so if you have 20 games, you're going to have 12 in one and 8 in another, so you're going to have two games folders, games one and games two or something like that. And you can, by default, it names it with the category of the apps that you put in it, but you can type in your own folder names.
Yeah, I like that it pulls from the category. That's a smart way to do it, for sure. But it's a folder. I think they should allow you to put as many things in there as you want.
And it's cool how you create a new folder too.
Yeah, you drag an application onto another application, and then both of the icons sort of shrink down and then appear on this like meta icon. It's cool.
Yep.
Let's
mail.
See.
Mail.
Yeah.
Universal inbox. Yes.
Yep. Finally. And threaded conversations.
And fast inbox switching and support for multiple Exchange accounts.
Yeah, finally. I don't even use Exchange, and I hear about that all the time. So that's cool. iBooks is coming to... Do you want to talk any more about the mail?
No.
Okay. iBooks is coming to iPhone OS 4. So we'll get a shrunken down version of iBooks for our iPhones, which is sweet.
I'm curious about the syncing. So they mentioned they're going to have, you know, it'll chapter, it'll keep your place, and you can sync that between multiple devices, and that it'll have the bookmark syncing as well. Is that but they didn't say if that was going to be over the air, or is it only going to work like my movies do today and my podcasts, where I have to, it's all the devices I sync through a single iTunes account?
In the land of ponies and cupcakes, it would go over the air, but in Apple land, you have to sync it, I'm sure.
Well, because if it went over the air, what would it go over? Would it,
that's true, yeah,
would it have to go over? Someone pointed out that it could very easily go over your iTunes account, because everybody gets a free iTunes account, and iBooks is tied to iTunes, and it sort of works, you know, all of our devices can access iTunes and things like that. So in an ideal world, that would be it. I was wondering if they might make it a feature of MobileMe at the very least, though. So it works like my calendar and my contacts do.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. I'm guessing iTunes, though, for syncing. All right. So we have, there are several other new features that Apple talked about, including a new advertising platform that Apple is doing. But before we talk about that, we have to talk about our sponsor, Citrix, with GoTo Assist Express. And you can try it free for 30 days at GoToAssist.com/Allie. But let me tell you a little more about GoTo Assist Express. We are all... our family's tech support guys. We're the go-to guys. Whenever there's a problem with someone's computer, we probably get that phone call. And it's usually the most irritating thing ever to do something over the phone that involves, okay, click here. All right, what do you see? Click here. It's just, you know, who wants to do that? It's irritating and tough to do, and you can't really tell if they're clicking on the right thing or not. You'd much rather see their screen. So... GoTo Assist Express allows you to do that. So the way it works is you have an application on your computer. You just open it up. And so whenever someone calls you and says, hey, I need help with my computer, you open the app, say, go to this URL, type in this code, and then within, I would say, 30 seconds tops, you'll be able to see their screen. You'll be able to control it. You'll be able to chat with them. You'll be able to send and receive files. You'll be able to see an entire... printout, not a printout, but a you know, a screen showing what applications are being run in the, you know, on the computer, what apps are installed, what the hardware is on the computer. It's 128-bit SSL encrypted, and you can help them out by controlling it or just type, talking them through it, whatever you want to do, and get them up and running. It's really simple for both you and the user. Like I said, you have to just open an app on your computer. You don't even have to log in, which is sweet. And then when it's done, it doesn't leave any stuff on their computer either. It actually deletes all that stuff when it's all finished. And you can also do up to 8 sessions at once, which is awesome for people who are who do this for a living. So if you're updating one person's computer, you can jump over to someone else's and do some other stuff. And, you know, it's fantastic. And you can try it free for 30 days. Go to assist.com/Ally. You do have to use your credit card. But if you want to make sure that there's no risk of you being charged while you're trying it, you can delete the credit card out. And then later when you realize how awesome it is, you can put your credit card back in there and, you know, keep doing it. Whatever you want to do. Try it out. Free for 30 days. Go to assist.com/Ally. It's awesome. And with that, we're talking about what we have here, enterprise features, right? So they have better data protection. It encrypts mail and attachments with your PIN code. Developers can now encrypt data within their applications. They have a bunch of other cool stuff for enterprise.
Well, one of the big ones was wireless distribution of corporate apps. So Apple has had a part of the developers program. You pay $99 a year in the sort of regular commercial one where you distribute your app through the App Store, but companies can build their own in-house apps. And in the past, you'd have to distribute them through a special tool that you could download from Apple's website, but you'd have to have physically connected phones, right? So you'd have to, if you rolled out an app to your sales team, you'd have to wait till they were all back in the office, dock them in and update their application that way. And now you can do it over the air, which I think is going to be a big deal for businesses that do that.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
GameKit?
I believe Center.
Game Center? Yeah, Steve called it GameKit at some point, but it's
yeah,
okay.
He did call it GameKit at some point.
That's probably what it's called to on the developer facing end, the API. But yeah, Game Center is a social gaming network that Apple's working on. It's going to be a developer preview in 4.0, and it's going to be available next year. It provides stuff like leaderboards, challenging your friends to games, automatic matchmaking. You can automatically find other players of similar skills. Leaderboards, like I said, achievements. It's essentially a social gaming network, and it sounds pretty good. I haven't seen a whole lot or heard a whole lot about it other than
because you can. Apparently it's in OS 4.0 and all you can do is sign up for an account, but there's no games that use it. So
yeah, but it sounds good. iAd is their new advertising platform for developers. And the big deal with iAd is that the ads aren't going to be lame. At least they shouldn't be lame. They have a lot of...
they have a less likelihood of being lame.
Less likelihood of being lame. More options for advertisers to do interactive ads with video and gaming, actually. You can do games within this advertising platform. And the cool thing is when you see a little banner in your application for, let's say, Toy Story... What is it? Four? Three?
Mm-hmm.
Three? Which one?
Three. That was
Toy Story 75.
75. That's what they showed in the demo.
Yeah, you tap on it, and it instead of dropping you out of the application, it does a little popover. It just you see the ad in full screen, and there's a little X. If you want to get out of it, you just hit the X, and you're back in your app. But you can see, like I said, interactive, awesome things. You can play games. There's audio, video. And
if you're Steve Jobs, you like it better than the app.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice in the keynote? Did you watch the keynote video?
Yeah.
He was totally digging the apps he was playing or the ads he was playing with.
Well, the app he was using looked stupid. So for whatever that
but,
worth.
But it, every once in a while in a keynote, and this has happened the last couple ones, it happened in the iPad keynote. There's a moment where Jobs forgets that I think he's in the middle of a keynote. He gets so absorbed in what he's demoing that he sort of goes into his own world. And it was during the ad he was playing with this Toy Story ad that it happened in this one. So if you missed it, but you bring up the good point of these ads and where Apple's going to have an advantage with iAd, I think, over things like AdMob is clicking on the ad does not take you out of the app.
Yeah,
that's
huge.
Big thing with iAd.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I would say, number one big thing. And then the number two big thing is the fact that you can do so many different cool things with it.
And no flash.
HTML.
Finding a way to make ads compelling is a really difficult thing to do.
Yeah. And I think that Apple has a real chance of kind of transforming what online ads are all about and how they work.
So,
right?
Yeah. The real question
they definitely do.
I want to ask both of you with respect to iAd, because I'm getting a lot of feedback from my audience, and people have been speculating, you know, is this good? Is this bad? I think it's good for the reasons that we mentioned in terms of just how the thing works and how ads might look. But is it good for us as people who are downloading apps? Are we going to see just a proliferation of apps with ads in it? Are we going to be bombarded by these iAds, or, you know, where are we going to see them?
I don't think we're going to see an inordinate number of applications with iAds and having it sound or look bad. I think we're going to see maybe a slight elevation in applications that use advertising, but I think that for the most part, it's going to remain about the same as how we're seeing it now, with pay apps being what they are and free apps being what they are.
What do you think, Jeff?
I'm not sure. I think what's going to happen is that Apple, you know how Steve said during the question and answer part afterwards, that Apple was going to have a light touch in the whole iAd approval thing. Mm-hmm. I think we will see a heavier touch in the application side, and I think Apple's going to have to clamp down on some developers, and I'm using that very generically because I don't know which ones, mm-hmm. but I think they'll have to clamp down on some developers that abuse the iAd thing. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll see this thing where we get applications that come out, and then we'll get some developers that bitch about how Apple rejected theirs because they didn't like our advertising. And then if we get to actually take a look at the app, we'd sit there and go, well, it's no surprise they didn't like your application. You can't get to the damn thing for all the ads you put in it.
Right.
So I think that's what we're going to end up seeing.
Yeah.
And here's my take. So a lot of people were saying, oh, we're going to have, you know, ads in all of our apps. This is going to be awful. We're going to be bombarded. And I kind of answered it in a couple different ways. One, I agree with you, Jeff. I think it's going to come down to individual developers and how they implement ads. Just because Apple has an ad network and it's easy to implement through the SDK doesn't necessarily, you know, mean that Apple's making everybody use ads, or, you know, they're going to be able to insert them how they insert them within their apps. So at the end of the day, you just don't have to get those apps. I think what it'll enable, though, is we'll be able to see more developers being able to put out cheaper priced or free apps and have a way to make money off of those. So I think it's going to help out with some of the pricing issues developers have had with having to, you know, have free apps or 99-cent apps and things like that. Some people are worried we're going to see, you know, I'm going to pay $20 for an app and then there's going to be ads in there because the developers are going to get greedy and want more revenue stream. Again, I don't think
they could do that right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think developers would do that and be able to get away with it because consumers would have a backlash. So I really don't even think Apple's going to have to monitor it, because us as consumers and purchasers and buyers of apps or users of apps are going to sort of define back to the developers, hey, this is cool, this isn't cool. And it's going to get really clear when you throw a bunch of ads in your apps that nobody likes, that, hey, why is my app not popular? Well, you're going to see it in the feedback, you're going to see it in the comments, you're going to, you know, the developer's going to know.
Yep.
It's almost like a self-policing system, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's how ads have been working on the iPhone all along.
Yeah. So I don't think it changes anything. I think Apple just wanted to get into the game, and it makes it a great option for developers because it's just a 60-40 split. So you put an ad in there, you don't have to sell it, you don't have to go out and do a bunch of work for it. You just put the bit of code in there where you want the ad to be, and it, like Google Ads, if you're doing them on your website, you get a check.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So Apple will be providing, there's a developer preview out right now, as you might have guessed. So if you're a developer, you can download 4.0 for your 3GS or your iPhone 3G, not the iPad. 4.0 will be available completely for the 3GS iPhone and third gen iPod Touch, as we said. Everything, it seems like everything except for multitasking will be available for the 3G and the second gen iPod Touch. And 4.0 will not run on the original iPhone or the iPod Touch, the original iPod Touch.
Right.
Yep. And it will be available for the iPhone and the iPod Touch in summer, right?
Right.
Probably when the next iPhone comes out. And for the iPad in October. Or was it fall? I don't remember.
They said fall. But there was speculation that would be October.
Probably October 29th.
Do you guys have any guesses why they would delay the iPad behind?
I have a speculation on that.
Yeah. I'll let you go in a second, Jeff. I just want to say that I think they just have more stuff in the iPad, as we've seen. You know, the iPad's a little buggier than the iPhone is right now.
But haven't they maintained that the iPad is just running the iPhone OS? And so to me, it seems like that's a little bit of not 100% the truth, I guess is what I want to say. Because, you know, we have 3.2 on the iPad. It sounds like we're going to jump 3.2 on the iPhone and the iPod Touch and go to 4. And then there's some other variant of 4 that is the iPad version because it's coming out later.
No. Okay, Jeff, what's your...
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that Apple is releasing the iPhone and iPod Touch version in the summer because they will have all the features locked in the way they want for those smaller devices. And then we have to wait a couple more months for the iPad version because of the iPad-specific features that they will surprise us with. And what I'm guessing is that those features will be better file management and printing. And to address what you just said, Adam, you are right in that Apple has been essentially showing us all of this stuff, saying, yeah, it's just the same OS on both devices. But then they give us iPhone OS 3.2 for the iPad, which is clearly not the same as what we have on the iPhone and iPod Touch.
Right.
So they've already created the different versions.
So they're still branches of the same trunk, I guess.
Yeah, they're branches of the same trunk, but we'll see slightly different features available depending on which device it is. And so I think we're going to see different version numbers for iPhone OS depending on which device it is now. So we now have, what are we on, 3.1.3 for the iPhone and iPod Touch?
Yeah.
And 3.2 adds in the iPad-specific features. And then we'll see 4.0 for the iPod and iPhone and iPod Touch. And then 4.1 or 4.2, whatever they want to call it, for the iPad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Because they just kind of made this big point that it was all the same. But I think it really is. It's a fork or a branch of the same thing.
Yeah. I think what you're on to, Jeff, I think that's probably what's going on. We're going to see something fancy at WWDC. Okay, so there are hints of iChat and a front-facing camera in the iPhone SDK, the 4.0 SDK. We see a process called iChat Agent running in the background. For those who use iChat, you may know about that. That's the thing that runs in the background that allows you to connect to AIM and all that stuff. And use iChat while it's quit, because that's the thing that runs in the background. And there's also, I haven't looked at what the front-facing camera indications are. I guess it's just iChat again with the video option.
Yeah, I'm still not seeing Apple putting a front-facing camera on the iPhone or the iPod Touch or the iPad.
Oh. And on the on the iChat thing, is anybody speculating that that's just there for the whole Game Center thing? I mean, the Game Center is going to have a chat component, right?
That would make sense.
Yeah, but then why can't they just put... I just want iChat on my phone, okay, Adam? I just want it on there.
You have it. It's AIM.
You know, wouldn't it be great, though, if you could actually do group chats in AIM on the iPhone or iPad?
Yeah.
What is up with that? We've had AIM for the iPhone for, what, like 3 years now? Because it was, what, 3 years ago when the original iPhone came out?
Yeah.
But yeah, in 2007.
Oh, okay. But when the App Store came out, so it's been 2 years.
Yeah.
Ish. Okay, so for 2 years, we've had AIM for the iPhone. And we still can't do group chats.
We knew that in Beehive. But yeah, I think that the AIM guys are kind of not doing a whole lot with AIM on the iPhone OS.
Yeah, and I know it's not as good as iChat. Do either of you think, I mean, I've kind of thought just in the back of my mind sometimes that maybe iChat doesn't exist because of AT&T and SMS, and it being one of those little side concessions that Apple says, okay, we won't do any real kind of chat thing ourselves. We can't prevent third parties from doing it, but you know, to force people onto SMS.
I can see that.
Do we want to open the whole can of worms with the third party development tools? Or do we want to leave that for next week? Do you have time, Adam?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so essentially, Apple.
You just assume I have time?
I do. Yeah, Jeff, do you have time?
Yes, of course I do.
See, I told you.
Yeah. Well,
do it.
Whatever.
Okay, so I believe this is in the rules for the 4.0 SDK.
Yes, it's rule 3.3.1.
Yes, and it basically says you can't use any third party. Application development.
It doesn't say that. What it says is that you can't use platform or development tools that are essentially cross compilers.
Applications that link to documented APIs through intermediary translation or compatibility layers.
Right. So that would be a cross compiler. So that would be like, and this is where everyone's getting all freaked out. Like. Using Adobe's Flash tools that let you export a Flash application as iPhone native code.
Right. Which initially sounds kind of bogus. But as Steve Jobs pointed out, John Gruber has a good point.
That's just so weird.
Isn't it weird? Yeah, I guess Steve Jobs reads Gruber's blog. Which is very cool for John Gruber. But essentially, John Gruber says that they've decided to do this because they want to have control over it. And for one, and two, that, you know, if Apple comes out with new features and new APIs and that sort of stuff, the developers using those third-party tools would have to wait until the developers of the third-party tools decide to adopt the new APIs that Apple has pushed out, essentially just creating a weird rift of, you know, stagnation between the tools and what Apple actually does.
Yeah, kind of. So the theory is that if you allow someone like Adobe, and it doesn't have to be Adobe, it's just that's what the hot button has been in all this. If you allow them to create their own system, which they have already done, and we've already seen how it works, which for the most part is good, but you're limited to doing only the things that Adobe has built their own versions of for the APIs, from the way I understand it. Yep. So there are specific limitations and very real limitations in what you can do with Flash compiled for iPhone. And I have a feeling that gap will get even bigger once iPhone OS 4 comes out, because I'm assuming, and if I'm wrong and there's a developer that wants to set me straight on this, please do. I'm assuming that the way that everything works for multitasking – in iPhone OS 4 means that Adobe would have to figure out some way to build their own version of the API into their compiler, and then to figure out how to trick the iPhone into thinking it's the same thing that is already there on the device, and then allowing their applications to run as their true third-party multitasking apps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeff, I think your assessment of it is kind of correct. And the other thing I'd point to is another thing impacted by this is there is a there's long been a project called the Mono Project that lets you run C# code on your Mac, basically cross compile it into a Mac app. And I guess they have a version of that for the iPhone, so that would be out in this example as well. And if anybody wants to see an example of what you're talking about, Jeff, where you'd have limited functionality to the native APIs, take a look at a project like Crossover, right? If anybody's used Crossover on the Mac, which is amazing. What Crossover does is takes advantage of something called the Wine Project, which is a cross compiler that lets you run Windows apps on a Mac without Windows. Well, they've only been able to reverse engineer or backwork some older Windows APIs. So new things that are in newer versions of Windows like XP and even more so Vista and Windows 7 aren't there. So if you want to run, say, a version of Word, well, you can only, in Crossover, you can only run, I think, I want to say 95 or 98.
Well, I think that they've updated Crossover quite a bit, but the point remains the same.
Right. They have to keep updating it every time Microsoft updates their thing, and there's a lag. You're behind, right?
Exactly.
And not every feature and not every API has been reverse engineered back into the system. And that's what Jeff was pointing out with the Flash thing, is they don't have access to everything that's in the SDK when they're using that as their development platform. And that's what we can assume Apple is taking issue to.
So if you're using a tool that, you know, both tools that are just meta tools for allowing developers with, you know, that don't have the skill to work in Objective-C or anything like that, you know, using a higher level tool, you know, creates that issue where they have to, you know, update for the tools that Apple's putting out there, but also for cross platform tools. So a tool that would allow you to compile your app for like a Windows Phone 7, Android, and iPhone, they would have to make concessions, I assume, in their tool that you wouldn't allow. Let me start over. You wouldn't be able to.
I think I can say it.
iPhone stuff with an application written in that language because it has to be compatible with all of these other platforms.
Right. What you're saying is they code for the lowest common denominator.
Exactly.
So they pick the device that has the fewest features and code everything for that.
Yep, and that would ultimately degrade the quality of many an iPhone application.
Well, and so here's where that argument gets subjective, though, for a lot of people. And I want to defend, you know, the other side of this argument, too, which is saying there are already about 100 or so apps, I think I heard recently, that have used this new CS5 build to iPhone functionality. And they're apps in the App Store, and I'm sure there are people out there that are using those apps that love them and think that they're great apps. Well, those are going to have to go away. And so you are going to end up blocking out or removing a number of apps that do exist and some people might enjoy. And I think that's what some people are taking issue with, is what does it matter how that app gets put together, or if it's limited in its functionality or can't take advantage of the full system that Apple built had it been built natively. And a lot of people point to what Apple did with Carbon Code, excuse me, when doing the transition to OS 10. You know, that's the same system. Or if you look at something like the Transmeta gaming stuff that's going on, that's enabling a lot of games to come to the Mac OS platform. So they are allowing it on the Mac OS side, and there are some benefits to it. And so those are going to get blocked out. So that's sort of the counter side to this, is we're going to lose some applications, we're going to lose some developers because of this ruling. And the ultimate thing is that good or bad, or are we going to be okay for it? And I think ultimately we're going to be fine for it, because there's such a large number of developers developing natively for the iPhone platform. So I think the average user is not going to see much impact because of this ruling, but it is upsetting some people, most notably Adobe, because they've been working on this technology for a long time, and they just rolled it out today, right? They just launched.
Yeah, they announced it today. and it's available in a month when CS5 ships. Now, okay, so now I'm going to jump on, I've talked the Apple defense side. Now I'm going to jump over to the Adobe side, just to be fair. There is a compelling argument for being able to code once, deploy many, meaning you develop an application, and then instead of having to start over for each platform you want to deploy on, you just say, make my binary for the iPhone, for the Nexus One, and for this Symbian device and this other thing, right, and whatever. And it just creates each application for you, and it's done. And you can save a lot of money by doing that. And for a lot of developers, that's something that could be really helpful to them. So losing the ability to code once and then deploy for multiple devices at the same time is an unfortunate loss.
Yeah. The one question that was brought up, and I don't know if it's been proven or if Apple's responded to it, and if anybody knows, I'd love them to email me, but I think somebody, and it maybe even have been in that Gruber piece, pointed out that maybe because of how they're doing the multitasking, you know, which really isn't truly multitasking, they're not just shoving the application to the background and letting it continue to run and take processes, that if these things are wrapped in these sort of cross-compilers, that Apple might not be able to put those into that state.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds reasonable.
Yeah, that sounds totally reasonable.
You know, because they're running another layer above the layer that Apple's aware of.
Right. Yeah, so there you go. It goes back to the whole thing of if you're not using the tools that Apple has approved, the full functionality can't be there.
Yeah, and I don't know if that is the case, because I don't know what Adobe is specifically doing when they build an app. Does it run natively, you know, as far as the iPhone OS is concerned, or is there some sort of barrier that causes problems with those apps with some of the new functionality in OS 4?
From what I remember from when Adobe was talking to me about this, and keep in mind, this whole cross-compiler thing that Adobe created, this has been available on different levels for months now. Mm-hmm. It's just going to officially be part of Creative Suite 5. So it leaves the whole Adobe Labs thing. What they're doing that is creating a binary for the iPhone that looks exactly like every other binary for the iPhone. So it is not a shell that's emulating and running Flash on the inside. It is actual iPhone code. The other side of that, though, is that since they are doing their own thing, all of the hooks and stuff that you would normally be able to call from applications, a lot of that functionality isn't available because they had to go back and reverse engineer all of that so that the features that you're going to use will actually be built into the code itself as opposed to called from the iPhone. And hopefully there's a developer out there that gets how the whole thing really works. And if I've misinterpreted that, they will set us straight.
Yes. So.
Cool. But the great Flash War of 2010 rages on. I'll just say that.
Oh, yeah.
I am amazed, just going back to the iPad conversation, are you guys amazed at how little impact the lack of Flash on the iPad has, even compared to the iPhone? Especially when it comes to YouTube videos, like anything that has a YouTube video, just the video plays right in line, even if it's a third-party app, which I'm loving, like my RSS news reader I'm using now. If there's an inline YouTube video, you just hit the button and it plays the video right in line. It doesn't jump out to the YouTube app, doesn't do any of that weird stuff anymore.
Yeah, that's awesome. Fantastic. I love reading through something on the iPad because the screen looks very similar to, you know, something that's physically printed out. So having a video in the middle of that is slightly magical.
Yeah. It doesn't take you out of the experience like it does on the iPhone.
Yep.
You know, I found in the, week and a half since the iPhone came out or iPad came out, that I spend a lot of the time that I would otherwise be researching information at my computer, sitting in my comfy chair over in the corner of my office, doing it from my iPad instead.
Yeah, me too.
it's really nice.
Yeah, I have to say that, you know, I was an iPad naysayer, totally. I still don't understand why I need this thing, but I spent a lot of money on it, so I'm going to play with it. But it's way more obvious to me that this is a consumption device, and that's what differentiates it from the computer. Mm-hmm. And it's fantastic. You know, right now there aren't a lot of applications that allow you to do really cool stuff like DJing, which is, I'm looking forward to like MIDI controllers and stuff for DJing. But right now I'm just so happy with just reading on the iPad. It's
you know,
a different from reading on your computer.
It's a completely different experience. And I think it's very telling about where the iPad is going and how good it is right now. In many ways, this is a horribly hobbled device.
Yeah.
But even still, the experience of using it is so fantastic that it's okay. I mean, the limitations that I'm experiencing because some of the applications aren't there yet, some of the features in applications I like to use aren't available yet, and I don't have the file system management or an easy way to get files back and forth. I don't have printing. Okay, whatever. I'm okay living with that stuff right now because everything else is so fracking cool that it's still worth it.
Yep.
And it's only going to get better.
Yeah.
Can I point out one huge deficiency, and I only want to bring it up because I noticed it today, and maybe I'm just being dumb and can't figure out how to do this. But maybe this problem still exists on the iPhone as well, and maybe I never noticed it because I just brought this up on my iPhone. When you go to edit a calendar event, why can't I move which calendar it's in?
Oh, I hate that.
Me too. I had that the other day because I had... My default calendar was set wrong, and I went to enter an appointment, and then I finished, and I said, oh, wait, that's in the wrong calendar, and then I couldn't change it, so I had to delete it. And
re-add it. You can pick it when you add it, which is interesting. Yeah. You can pick the calendar you want it to go to, but if you pick the wrong one, and you realize it, and you just want to edit it back, you can't change it. You have to delete and re-add it, and I just noticed, I guess you have to do that on the iPhone as well. Yep. I never noticed it there either. Why can't we fix that?
There's also no time zone support either.
Oh, you have no idea how annoying that is for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I live in Denver, and everyone that I work with is on the East Coast and West Coast. And then, Michael, you're in Central Time.
Yep.
So that adds another time zone for all. I work in all the time zones every day. And when I put appointments in, I need to be able to set what time zone they're from so that they show up at the appropriate times for me. And not being able to do that on my iPhone is such a pain in the ass. What I end up doing if I have to enter an appointment in a different time zone, which is probably about half the stuff I enter, I enter it for the time that it is whatever it would be locally and have to put a note for myself to set the time zone correctly later on.
Okay. You know,
so when I get back to my computer, that is ridiculous. I should never have to do that.
So if Apple's iPhone calendar developers and iPad calendar developers are listening, fix it, please.
Yes, please.
Hopefully that's one of the 100 new features iPhone OS 4. And I keep wanting to call it 4.0, but it is just iPhone OS 4, right?
It is. And I've developed this nasty habit of putting 0.0 on the end when I write it out.
Oh, yeah, I see that too. I'm just going to keep saying it. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. All right. What else we got?
iPhone picks.
Picks.
We're going to end this episode. We have some more stuff we could talk about, but we've been going on forever, right?
And eventually we're going to fill up Adam's hard drive with this recording.
Yeah. Okay. Adam, do you want to go first with your iPhone pick?
I do a big full AIFF recording, so
he's been massive. Been having to add drives to his Drobo as we talk.
How big is it now? No, I don't know. That's a conversation for another day.
So do you have an iPhone or an iPad?
You know what? I have so many that it's going to be hard, but I think I'm going to pick this selfish one that I was telling you about. And it's only because I need to expand my lands and my empire, and I want everybody to jump on and add me as a friend on the Plus Plus Network for a game called We Rule. Jeff, have you gotten sucked into this?
I have not, but I'm getting emails and text messages and stuff with links to go do this thing.
So it's an NG Moco game, and they run the Plus Plus social network, and it's basically, here's the honest truth, it's Farmville for the iPad. Pure and simple. Except the theme is that it's a kingdom. You have a castle, and you set up a farm, and you grow crops, and you mine things, and you fish for things, and you get money, and you make your empire bigger. And the faster you can do this, the more land you get, and the bigger your castle, and what have you. And it does have an in-game purchase element, just like Farmville. So the way it works is everything's time-based. So what's kind of cool about it, what I'm actually kind of enjoying about it, is you can somewhat control the experience, because you have to come back and, like, so if you plant some crops, you have to come back and you have to harvest them or they die. And if you don't harvest them, then you don't get the money for it. But it has push notifications. Big pet peeve right now is the push notification server seems to be broken. So people aren't getting push notifications and their crops are dying because you're supposed to get a notification. Hey, your crops are ready to pick. That's not working right now. So if anybody gets into this, but you come back and you do that sort of thing. If you want that to happen faster, so it'll tell you this crop's going to take an hour and a half or 2 hours or 12 hours and to grow. And what's great about that is you can say, okay, I know I'm not going to be on my iPhone for 12 hours now. I'm going to bed. Well, plant a bunch of crops that take 12 hours. They'll be ready to pick when you get up in the morning. So that's kind of nice. But it's just kind of a really fun game. And I need more people to play it. So if you do get on there, I'm MacCast on the network, add me and I can grow my massive We Rule empire. Yep. But it's definitely one of those time suck games, so if it's completely addictive. I had been avoiding it and then met with a friend and he's like, oh, you got to do it, and I got on there, and of course now I'm addicted. So
yeah, it's called We Rule and it's free,
well, until you actually buy stuff. Oh, so yeah, I forgot to add the other thing. So just like Farmville, if you want your crops to grow instantly, you can spend what's called mojo. And of course, you can buy more mojo in-app if you run out. But you don't have to. And I have not bought any, and I have no plans to buy any. But you'll progress slower, I guess, ostensibly in the game.
Cool.
That's it. We Rule.
We Rule. Okay. Jeff, what do you have for us this week?
I just keep flicking back and forth through my screen, trying to decide which one of these cool apps to talk about.
Are we talking about an iPad app?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay.
Have we talked about Goodreader?
No.
Oh, okay. Then that's what I'll go with. Okay, so Goodreader, it's all one word, Goodreader, is a very, very cool application that let you view PDFs and pretty much any document that your iPad can recognize. And it lets you go beyond file size limitations that some of the built-in apps might have. So you can look at really big PDF documents and stuff. And so it's this awesome multi-document reader system that gets even better because you can link it to your Dropbox, you can link it to your MobileMe account, and you can go and get documents from there, from those places, and then it will download them to your iPad for you. And as if that's not enough, you can connect to like other web dev servers, and you can connect to other local servers and get content off of those. But wait, there's more. You can turn your iPad into a web server so that other people can get files off of it as well.
Oh, wait. Okay, so you can read files from another server on your LAN?
Yeah.
Can you play video?
Not yet.
Okay.
But yeah, like right now I just fired it up and it sees my TiVo and my... and my HP Color LaserJet 2600N.
Can it print to that?
No.
Okay. But it still sounds awesome, though.
It is. And the price is just crazy good.
Oh, tell me more.
I think it's 99 cents.
Yeah.
Good reader. One word, 99 cents. Go get it. Looks cool.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that's pissing me off about it right now, and it's a very minor thing, is that when you go to tap on one of the categories to, you know, to like manage servers and stuff, if you tap on the name, nothing happens. You have to tap on the little disclosure arrow thing instead, which is kind of lame. You should be able to tap on the names also.
Oh,
so it's just a minor UI annoyance for me.
Gotcha.
So Jeff gives you a good, nice productivity tool that'll probably earn you money, and I give you something that's going to waste all your time and probably end up costing you money at some point.
That's how nature balances itself out.
Yep. Okay, so my pick, and we've probably talked about it before, is Instapaper Pro, but I'm talking about the iPad version of Instapaper Pro. And this is one of the applications that just makes the iPad so worth it for me. Because if you don't know what Instapaper is, it's a service that allows you to save things to be read later. So if you surf around the internet and you find one of those super long articles, you just don't have time for it, want to read it later, you install a bookmarklet. This happens before you go out on the internet. So you install the Instapaper bookmarklet into your Safari or Firefox or what have you. And when you come across one of these things that you want to save for later, you click on that and then it saves it into your Instapaper. And what you could do then is go back to your Instapaper later and check out all the stuff in there on your computer, and it saves all that. But the even better thing to do is to get Instapaper Pro for your iPad or iPhone. It's a universal app, actually. Instapaper Pro looks at that list, it syncs up with the Instapaper service and pulls all of the saved articles down. It actually caches it. So once you've opened up the app and it loads and syncs all of the articles that you've saved, you can turn off your airport. You can go read somewhere else without internet on the plane or whatever. But it just takes all that stuff and nicely formats it so that you just have big text and you can tweak the text size and the font, in the spacing and all that stuff. You can put it on white on black or black on white if you want. And it just gives you the text in an article format. So it gets rid of all the blog stuff on the outside, just gives you the text. If there are images included, it includes the images. And you can just read it. It's fantastic. It looks great. And there's this pagination feature, which I didn't know about until I got the iPad app, where if you tap it, instead of scrolling through the piece, you just tap this pagination thing. Then when you get to the end of what you can see on the screen, you tap the bottom of the screen and then it gives you a new page. So it just takes whatever you've given it and turns it into a paged document. So you can page through it. It's really nice. Yeah. It also has built-in Wiktionary lookup, which is just the coolest thing ever. So if you're reading through and you come across a word, you don't know what it is, you tap and hold on it. It says look up or define. And it does a little pop-up and it just gives you a definition from Wiktionary. Now, that doesn't work too well right now. And this is a 1.0 for the iPad. So I'm guessing it hasn't been tested thoroughly. So I'm sure that'll be all fixed. But for the most part, it's oh so cool. $5, Instapaper Pro, go get it.
Yeah, it's awesome. I want to add one thing that puts it over the top for me, and that's the integration, the app integration, third-party app integration that they have.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So yes.
Apps have, well, you go ahead.
What yeah, I was say? Just going to say, it works with so I use it with NetNewsWire. Also, my new news reader, which is called, NewsRack. So NewsRack, NetNewsWire, and also I use Tweety, too, as my Twitter client, which if you click on a link, it has the browser built into it and you can add stuff to Instapaper from there. So I never have to leave those apps. If someone tweets out something and like you're saying, Michael, it's a big long article. I have it in Tweety. It's up there. I don't want to bother reading it. Just hit read later and boom, it shows up in my Instapaper app.
Yeah.
It's just awesome.
You can also do folders too. There are folder options with Instapaper. So if you want to keep things sorted in a certain way, you can have separate bookmarklets that you save you know, in different ways. You can also in Safari on the iPad as well. If you're browsing around in Safari on the iPad, the bookmarklet thing works just the same.
Yep.
And it's just, it's super cool. I love it. Instapaper Pro. And with that, the action item is the podcast show name. I think we're going with We Have Communicators. Vote yay or nay. Send an at reply to at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And I guess I'll report back next week whether or not I ignored everybody who said nay.
Hey, I had a question for you.
Sure, go for it.
With the new podcast name, is there going to be a change of URL and place for the podcast, or is it going to continue to live at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast?
It will be moving as soon as we have a new name.
Okay.
So
I guess that's a little more incentive to sort it out.
Yeah, that also helps. And right now we have communicators.com is available.
You better grab it now.
Better grab it. Yeah. Okay. And our sponsor this week is, or this month, I should say, is GoToAssist.com/Alley. GoToAssist Express. Support us by supporting them. It's a great product. And you can get the podcast show notes as well as our picks at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. And you can also send feedback to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. And you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, and twitter.com/jgamet. Thanks.
As always, it's great to be here.
It's great to have you. And Adam Christensen's at the MacCast, maccast.com, and twitter.com/maccast. Adam, do you have anything else to talk about?
We are so close.
So close.
Stay
to something
tuned
else.
To the next episode of the MacCast. Okay. I will be revealing all of the details about the MacCast membership program. So
MacCast.
Ooh, exciting.
Yes.
Yes. So I have that to announce. I am going to have the details, and it will probably be going, I'll even tell your listeners now, I believe the launch date will be Monday next week, will be the first episode of the... So a week from today, that day we're recording. Yeah. So just be watching the feed, watch maccast.com. There'll be a big announcement and all kinds of information.
Yeah, maccast.com. And with that, another something something podcast name is done.
An iPod.
Before, like five times.
Who's playing what music in the background?
That's Jeff.
I'm totally playing Plants vs. Zombies. I figured eventually, guys, to get this all sorted out, and then I'd pause the game.
Oh,
I'm just blowing the living fuck out of everything.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.